So I decided to pick a topic that I think relates, obviously, to the Parshios HaShavua. We're obviously towards the beginning of Sefer Shmos, but in the beginning, in the middle, in the heart of the Yetzias Mitzrayim story, which is not just a story of leaving Egypt, of course, it is the ultimate story and the original story of Geula, of redemption. And what I'd like to do is investigate through the Chumash, through the Parshios that we have and are continuing to read, some of the keys, some of the clues that the Psukim themselves, Chazal and the Mefarshim give us as to what got the Jewish people into trouble to begin with, what brought them down to Mitzrayim, what gave them so much difficulty to begin with, why were they enslaved, why were they persecuted, what were the keys, the solution for the Geula, for the redemption, had they get themselves out of trouble, and then what message, what lesson can we learn, how can that help us for us to ultimately get the Geula Shlema that we are all yearning for. So in order to do this, I have assembled a group of sources which I think are really fascinating, but also inspiring, and I think will really be informative to all of us. So let's begin at source number one, the top of the sheet. Again, our first agenda is to try to find out and understand, how did the Jewish people get into this mess? How did they get into Gullus to begin with? What was the problem? So going back to the beginning of the Sefer Shmos and Parsha Shmos, right, in Perek Bet, you have the first source on your sheet, the Torah tells us the famous story of when Moshe goes out and he sees the Egyptian, when he sees the two Jews fighting with each other. Chazal tells us that Dathan and Aviram, this is after we've already learned about the fact that he killed the Egyptian who was beating the Jew. But here he starts up with the two Jews who are fighting amongst each other, and they react very badly to him. Vayomer misamchal ish sar v'shofet, who made you the boss? Who put you in charge? Right? Aleinu lahargenu ata omer, are you coming to kill us also? Kasharak et ha-mitzri, as you killed the Egyptian. And of course, the Torah tells us in a very powerful and poignant conclusion of the pasuk, Vayira Moshe was afraid, Vayomer, and he said, Achein noda hadavar. Indeed, it is known. I understand what the problem is. Now, of course, from a simple pshat perspective, we understand exactly what the pasuk means. And that is that the story is out, the secret is out. Now that everyone evidently knows Moshe reasons that I killed the Egyptian, I'm in big trouble. I can't just stay here. Achein no das hadavar. Because these people just name dropped, if you will. They mentioned that they know that I killed the Egyptian. I'm in big trouble. I'm at risk. I got to get out of here. However, Chazal, quoted by Rashi in the Medrash, tell us something else. Take a look at source number two. Umidrasho da'aglo al shara b'yisrael rishayim d'laturin. Moshe said, now I realize that the Jewish people are gossipers. These are the kind of people who would talk to each other and gossip, and perhaps even worse, these are people who would even gossip and tattletale on a Jew to the Egyptians, to Paro, to our mortal enemies. Says Rashi in continuation, Amar, he says, Me'ata shema einam ru'uyin ligael. Says Rashi, that's what Achein no daha davar means. Now I understand, had they get themselves in trouble, they're not worthy of redemption. They're not worthy of being in a better place. As it continues in the second line, No deli hadavar sheiti tameyalav. I now understand something that I was always worried about, and I was always confused about. Ma chatu Yisrael mikol ein umos lios nirdem ba'avuras parach. Moshe says, I couldn't understand, right? And again, think about this. This is a question that has reverberated throughout the generations, right? Jewish people ask themselves all the time, what did we do to deserve this? How come we seem to be constantly singled out by our enemies for such difficult circumstances and to be treated so terribly? Says Rashi, what's the answer? Moshe says to himself, Aval, roa ani, shehem ru'uyim lekach. What a painful, painful few words to read. Says Moshe, now I see that they deserve it. Achein no dahadavar. Moshe comes to the painful conclusion, I now understand how the Jewish people got themselves into this. And what does Moshe not say? He doesn't say because they didn't keep Glad Kosher. He doesn't say because they weren't makbar on Tefillin or Daf Yomi or Tznius or Ches. What does he say? Dalturin. They were gossipers. They were disloyal to each other. They lacked not only decency, but I think the clear indication here is achdus. And this idea that the golus of Mitzrayim was primarily caused by a lack of brotherly love, unity, and connectedness between the Jewish people is further highlighted in an amazing and creative reading of the Vilna Gaon to source number 3. In source number 3, you have the pasuk. You know, let me make the text a little bigger for everyone. Hopefully, can see even easier. In source number 3, you have a pasuk going back to Bereishis, the pre-Mitzrayim story, right? When Yaakov was very scared about deceiving his father and the brachos, etc. And what happens? His mother assures him, Rivka assures him, don't worry, everything's going to be okay. Vatomer lo imo, alai kelalascha bini. Ach shema bekoli, etc. You go, you listen. But alai kelalascha. Now, again, simple pshat, what is his mother telling him? I got this one. It's on me. If you get in trouble, if you get caught, I'll be there for you. And by the way, this is something which totally makes sense, that resonates, first of all, in many human interactions. It could be at work or in any other circumstance. Somebody puts you up to something, somebody asks you to do something, and they say, don't worry about it. You know, if there's any blowback, I'll take responsibility. But I think it's actually particularly poignant, even more so, because I think, at least in some cases, this is the kind of thing that even happens in families and actually with parents, right? Let's be honest. Dad and mom don't always see eye to eye. And sometimes mom or dad will say to the child, you know, you do this. And then the child will say, yeah, but mommy or Ima or Abba said not to. Don't worry. If there's a problem, I'll take care of it. I'll talk to Abba. You go do this, right? This is very real. Like, we could totally get that. And that's the simple pshat. However, again, it's not on your sheet, but there's an amazing teaching and a tradition that's brought down in the name of the Vilna Gaon. That the Vilna Gaon says that this word, alai, is actually a Rosh Tevot. Ayin, Lamid, Yud. What is it a Rosh Tevot for? Ayin stands for Esav. Lamid stands for Lavan. And Yud stands for Yosef. What is that talking about? What do those three things have to do with anything? So the Vilna Gaon explains as follows. He says that Rivka is telling Yaakov, it's true that there's going to be complications. Life won't be so simple. Your descendants, the Jewish people, they will suffer, unfortunately. However, alai, only these three things, kilalascha. Only these three situations will bring curse, will bring pain and punishment to you. Ayin Esav, Lamed Lavan, Yud Yosef. That's the tradition of the Vilna Gaon. So many years ago, I can't remember if I saw it or I heard it, but the interpretation was from Rav Asher Weiss, and he explained that what the Vilna Gaon was getting at was that these three personalities who persecuted the Jewish people, Esav, Lavan, and Yosef, i.e. the Mitzrayim story, our story, they represent three different causes of golus, of pain, of persecution. Esav, he says, represents violence, actual fighting. Lavan represents assimilation. And what does Yosef represent? Sinas Chinam. Why doesn't it say Mitzrayim? Why does the Dafka say Yosef? Because the origin story of the Mitzrayim Golus goes back to the Yosef story. The divisiveness, the Sinas Chinam between Yosef and his brothers is, of course, what led the Jewish people down to Egypt and began the whole problem. And if you put together the Medrash that we saw in the first source with this Vilna Gaon, basically you get an incredibly clear and powerful and unfortunately painful picture. And that is that the Jewish people were brought into, or brought down to Egypt and ensnared into Golus because of this combination, unfortunately. The Sinas Chinam of Yosef and his brothers brought them down into Mitzrayim. And unfortunately, as Moshe attests, it was the continued divisiveness and fighting between the Jewish people while they were in Egypt, which made them worthy of the horrible, horrible persecution and enslavement that they were suffering at the hands of the Egyptians. This is step one of the shir. We see why the Jewish people got down to Egypt and what was the cause, unfortunately, of the terrible persecution that they were suffering in Egypt. I want to now turn to the second part of the shir, which is going to show and explain, and now we're starting to get into Parshas Ve'era and Bo, and eventually B'Shalach, where the Geula of Mitzrayim. If we now understand how the Jewish people got into this mess, we're now, I think, in a better position to understand the Geula part of the story and how they got out of it. And before I do that, now that I see that I think everyone I was waiting for is in the shir, I can see them, I want to take this opportunity, as Shoshana mentioned, I think in a text that she sent out, that we are dedicating this shir as a zechus and a refuah shleima for grandmothers of two of the participants in the shir, two of our dear members. One is Alyssa Chambray's grandmother, Yachad Bas Devora, and then Rebecca Krasner's grandmother, Esther Ratza Bas Rifka Bela. They should have the refuah shleima, Bekarov, Besoch, Shar Chole, Yisrael, and we certainly hope that this Torah plays its part in helping give them that refuah shleima and the zechus that they need. We're talking about the geula of the Jewish people, and Emir Tashem, they and your families should have a geula as well. So how did the Jewish people get out of this mess? Now we know how they got into it. How did they get out of it? So let me once again see if I know how to share a screen, and let's continue now and see the next source. So if you take a look at source number 4, is a medrash called Tana de Be'eliyahu. And this is a medrash which was kind of made famous by an incredible comment of the Chafetz Chaim. I think someone's trying to send a chat or question to me, but I can't really see that. So if you just want to ask a question. Oh, I see the Emma, thank you very much. Okay, fine, good. Appreciate that, Alyssa. Yes, okay. Anyway, if you send me a chat while we're in the share document thing, it's hard for me to see it. And as you could tell, since I'm a man, it's hard to multitask. So have some Rahmanis on me, please. So this is a medrash that in source number 4, which is, I think, embellished and made famous by an incredible comment of the Chafetz Chaim, which we'll see in source number 5. But before we see the Chafetz Chaim, let's see the source in its original, and that is source number 4. Says the medrash, Mahu ha-mitzvah ha-achas shehaisa biyadam. Or what's the backdrop, of course, is that we know, Chazal tell us that the Jewish people, when they were in Egypt, were far from perfect, to put it mildly, and far from tzaddikim, right? We know this tradition, they were on the 49th level of Tumah. Bad, bad news. And yet, despite the fact that we have many sources that maintain that the Jewish people merited the geula in the schus of the avos, and the promise that Hashem had made to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, nevertheless, Chazal seemed to be quite convinced that we had to have some merit, some source. It couldn't have been that we had nothing. And therefore Chazal tried to find what was that one merit, that one zechus, that one mitzvah that the Jewish people might have held on to that helped them in their geula. And there are different opinions in the medrash, even in this medrash, there may be in others that are brought, but look what this medrash says where I have it underlined. Incredible. Sheniskabtsu kulam ba'aguda achas. All the Jewish people gathered together in a unified group. V'karsu bris. And they made a covenant, an agreement between them. Sheyasu gemilas chasodim ze im ze. That they would help out each other. They would do chesed. Now, what's the background of this agreement and why was it so significant? So for this, we turn to the incredible words of the Chafetz Chaim in source number 5. As some of you may know, the Chafetz Chaim was actually quite the prolific author. We have a common tradition in Yiddishkeit that, you know, certain great rabbis are often known throughout history by the names of their famous works, right? Not by their actual name. Right? So obviously when he was a little kid, his mother didn't say to him, Chafetz Chaim le, you know, pick your clothes up off the floor, you know, take care of your sister, don't beat her up or anything like that. Right? His name was Yisrael Meir, of course. But he's very famous because he wrote the Chafetz Chaim. Now he also wrote another book called the Mishneh Berurah. Who wrote the Mishneh Berurah? The Chafetz Chaim, right? Now we understand that actually makes no real sense, but in Yeshivish, we understand what that means, right? It's the same person. He's from Meir Kohen. So he also wrote many, many other books besides Mishneh Berurah and Chafetz Chaim, which are just not as famous, but are quite important. And perhaps number three on the list would be source number five, the Ahavas Chesed, which is the Chafetz Chaim's treatise on Chesed and other mitzvos bein Adam l'chaveiro. So source number five, he says as follows. This is incredible. Now again, he's writing, as we know, in the first part of the 20th century between the world wars. It was a difficult, shreklich, difficult time for the world and for the Jewish people then. Says the Chafetz Chaim, look at this, it's worth reading almost all this inside because it's so powerful. Hine ata midas hadin gavra ma'od al holam. Chafetz Chaim, whatever we think of him, he did not have his head in the book all day and he didn't know what was going on in the world. Chafetz Chaim was very worldly in the sense he knew very much what was going on. He said, it's bad news out there. The world and the Jewish people are suffering. Ein shum eitzel hisnatzel midei tzaros hamischachos yom vyom. We can't think of any, you know, secret, you know, silver bullet or secret plan to get out of the tzaros, which seem to keep on getting newer and stronger every day. Ma ma'od yesh lehischazek b'midas ha'chesed, k'desh al yidei zeh yit'orer midas ha'chesed ha'elyona. Al derech ha'teva, says the Chafetz Chaim, we have no solution. The only hope we have is we need Hashem to intervene, not because we deserve it, says the Chafetz Chaim, but out of His kindness and compassion, Hashem's midas ha'chesed. What's going to bring the midas ha'chesed of Hashem, says the Chafetz Chaim? If we actualize our own midas ha'chesed. After all, he quotes a different medrash, not the one we just quoted, but an equally powerful medrash, which says, I'm at the end of the second line, Uma elu shein ba'atzman tzrichin chesed, osin chesed elu emelu, ani she'ani malei chesed v'rachamim, alachas kama v'kama, shani tzarech ligmol chesed imbriosai. What an amazing statement of the Medrash, which just kind of assumes what we said a few moments ago. When Hashem looks down, and He sees the Jewish people doing chesed with each other, He says to Himself, this is incredible. After all, the Jewish people are suffering terribly. They themselves need chesed. Instead of just being takers, they're being givers. How can I, Hashem says, who is the ultimate giver, not be inspired to intervene and to act in kind? Now that medrash is powerful enough, but the Chafetz Chaim, if you look in continuing in the fourth line, he connects that to the medrash we had seen above in the Tanu de Be'eliyahu. Now, I didn't give you that whole source there because we had just seen it in its original. But take a look on the fourth line after the three dots, after the ellipse. This is now the Chafetz Chaim, again, giving his own embellishment in his commentary. Uma haya ha-krisus bris l'gemilas chasadim. Says the Chafetz Chaim, what exactly was the Medrash talking about? What bris are we talking about? What chesed are we talking about? What situation was that? So he says here, continuing, Ella. Inyan kachu kihem kisharosh ein shum eitzel hinatzel migzerosav shalparo v'hashibur holecho miskaber yom yom ma'asu. The Jewish people tried everything. They tried diplomacy, what in some circles may be called shtadlonos. Maybe they tried bribery. They might have tried a physical rebellion. Nothing was working. There was no hope. There were no more bullets left in the gun. There were no more moves to play. What should we do? Niskabtsu ba'aguda achas. They got together. V'tochsu eitza. They right? The Jews, they got together and they started, you know, whiteboarding it, we might call it nowadays in the corporate scenario, right? Coming up with ideas. Brainstorming. And what did they come up with? Hiskimu beinehim sheyelchu baderech Hashem levado. Lo yishanu ashmam v'lishonam. So number one, the Chafetz Chaim references well-known midrashim, which we know. The Jewish people reinforced their identity. Even if these weren't strictly halachic things. We're going to dress a certain way to keep our identity. We'll use a certain language, use certain names to keep our identity. But that's clearly not the main point, as the Chafetz Chaim continues. V'gam karsu bris yacha ligmo chesed zemze. Most importantly, they made a covenant, an agreement, to help out each other. Hainush al yidei ze yisora lamala chesed shal Hashem yisbarach aleihem. And hopefully, by helping each other, that would inspire Hashem's compassion to help them. Umimele yivatlu lebesov kizerosav shel paro. And hopefully that would bring Hashem's midah of chesed to help us escape from the death clenches of paro. And says the Chafetz Chaim so powerfully, in case you missed the point, ube'emes kein haya lebesof. Shadavar zeh sibo legeula. And the zeh is talking about the chesed. We're not discounting the distinctions that were made, the efforts that were made to preserve Jewish identity, Jewish clothing, Jewish names, Jewish language. The Chafetz Chaim quotes it. It's fine. But that was not the Siba of the Geula. That's not what brought the Geula. Says the Chafetz Chaim, you know what brought the Geula? The Chesed and the Achdus that the Jewish people displayed. And again, what I think, he's really just quoting the Midrashim, but I think he's painting a more embellished and a fuller picture. And I think what he's really getting at, and I think it makes it so powerful, we already saw this hinted at in the Midrashim themselves, is that if you are in a difficult situation, I certainly hope, B'li Ayin Hara, it should never be otherwise, no one in this shir has ever experienced anything like the type of pain and suffering that we're obviously describing here. Of course not. And yet, whenever we're going through something difficult, it could be as minor, quote unquote, as a bad day at the office, a difficult day with our children, or it could be something more serious, God forbid, a health crisis or something like that in our immediate or broader family. When we're going through something, especially if it extends over time, it's only natural, it's only human to become more inward focused. To think about what I need, what's good for myself, my family. I don't know how else to say it. It's actually totally normal and totally natural. The instinct for self-preservation becomes overwhelming and primary. I think it may be in a previous year, maybe last year, I don't remember. I think I quoted to you a very, very powerful section of Rabbi Jonathan Sachs's Haggadah, where he speaks about this theme as well. And in there, he quotes a selection from Primo Levi when he writes about his experience in the Holocaust and specifically when they were being liberated. And I don't remember the exact quote. I didn't bring it with me, but I remember because it was so powerful, both Primo Levi himself. And of course, you add Jonathan Sachs to the mix and you're talking about something incredibly eloquent and powerful. But he talked about how the whole time previously he had been in the camps, everyone was profoundly selfish. Everyone was just worried about how they're going to survive, their rations of bread, their rations of soup, their blanket, etc. Totally normal. Primo Levi was saying it about himself. And it was only at the last moment, this was the story that he was describing, that Rabbi Sachs quoted in the Haggadah, where all of a sudden, as they heard that the Russians were coming, they were becoming liberated, Primo Levi describes with great eloquence the first act of chesed that he saw. He said, I hadn't seen it in years. And all of a sudden now someone was helping somebody else. Someone who was shivering and needed a blanket desperately themselves was happy to still share that blanket. I think that idea is exactly what the Chafetz Chaim is describing, and it really comes from the Medrash. The Jewish people were in a living hell for years, generations, 200 plus years. Slavery, murder, persecution. It would have been only natural, and perhaps it was even true for much of the time, for everyone to just be focused exclusively on looking out for number one, just caring about themselves, just caring about what they need. And then, despite all of that, in the midst of that Gehenim, the Jewish people made this Bris Shel Chesed. What an extraordinary act of Gvura. Instead of looking in, they were actually willing to look out. Instead of just focusing on themselves, they focused on others. Instead of just being a taker, they became a giver. And maybe they didn't have 2 shekels to their name, but if they saw someone who needed whatever they had even more than they needed it, they gave it away. They shared the blanket. That incredible act of selflessness, instead of the more natural selfishness, says the Chafetz Chaim from the Medrash, that was the key to the Geula. Now, I want to just develop this idea a little bit more by sharing a few other incredible sources with you. And I think that, at least according to some, it actually goes back even earlier than this Bris Shel Chesed. It became kind of a mass movement. The first Gemachs, Tzedakah organizations, Laman Achai, Kupa Shel Tzedakah, the first of all of that was being started exactly in the Chafetz Chaim and the Medrash's depiction. However, that was on a massive national level. But when it came at least to some of the great people, specifically the hero of our story, the hero of the Geula story, who was, of course, Moshe. And what do we know about Moshe that fits this theme? They got into the mess because of a lack of achdus, a lack of kindness to each other. And now we see from the Chafetz Chaim in the Medrash that what was the key to getting out of the mess, getting out of the galus? Focusing on chesed and caring for each other, even in the most trying of circumstances. So if you take a look at source number 6 and 7, we begin at the earliest stage. You could even call it the pre-stage of Moshe's career as the biblical hero that he becomes. Sources number 6 and 7. Source number 6, what a famous pasuk. I quote this a lot, so if you've heard it from me, I don't apologize for repeating it. Certain things deserve to be repeated. This is incredible. The pasuk says in Shmos earlier, right in the beginning, baby Moshe is cast in the river. We quote, we know from Chazal, Miriam is watching. Bas Paro goes for a little spatzir in the river, and all of a sudden, says the Torah, Vatiftach, Vatireu Esayeled. She sees the little baby floating down the river. Vihine Hanar Boche. And the lad is crying. Vatachmolalov, she has compassion on him. Vatomer, she says, Miyalde Ivrimze. It's a Jewish baby. Every part of this pasuk needs to be understood. First of all, Many Mefarshim are bothered by the word change, right in that early underlined part of the pasuk. She sees a yeled, but she hears a na'ar. A yeled is a baby. A na'ar is something clearly older, maybe an adolescent, or at least something older. A na'ar is not the same thing as a yeled. What's going on? Furthermore, there might be an easy answer to the question, but at least it's not obvious in the pasuk. How did she know this is a Jewish baby, and why only at that moment does she declare it? Now again, the easy answer is, because who in the else would be floating down a river? Why else would there be a baby there? It must be. Okay, I think as a pshat answer, that's certainly reasonable, although you still might wonder why only at the last moment after she had Rachmanis on him does she say, oh, it's a Jewish child. But maybe there's an answer for that too. Al derech hapshat, I think the na'ar and the yeled thing are complicated and need an answer, but the other point is still curiosity. So as I mentioned, there are many different answers to these questions. However, one of my all-time favorites is a wild and incredible answer suggested in source number 7 by the Baal HaTurim. Now, I don't know how many of you are familiar with this commentary. It's one of the Rishonim. He must have been a mathematical genius, because he's the king of gematrias. And he wasn't a chassid. He wasn't even a neo-chassid. He's the king of gematrias. There's nobody who could do gematrias like the Baal HaTurim. And again, what makes gematrias, you know, I'm a little bit, you know, gematrias are not my thing, but good gematrias, and there's definitely a difference between better and worse gematrias, the good ones are able to convey a profound thought using this encoding system, whereby we know that, you know, the letters in the Torah are either seen as Roshei Tevot for other words, or they have numerical values, etc. So look what the Baal HaTurim does. He does it in a pithy and a short sentence, but we'll unpack it and you'll see something earth-shattering, amazing, and unforgettable. Says the Baal HaTurim, source number 7, bottom of the first page. Hine na'ar bocha. It's good you're all sitting. Ze Aron, shehinichto etzel hateva. Whoa! Our whole lives, what did we learn? Who was watching baby Moshe? His older sister Miriam. Says the Baal HaTurim, Aron was also there. And more than that, who was crying? It was not Moshe who Bas Paro heard. She saw him. Who did she hear crying? Not the way we read the pasuk every other time in our life until tonight, that it was Moshe who was crying. She heard Aaron crying. Now, of course, the Baal HaTurim is saying this to answer which question? The change of Na'ar and Yeled. Now, if you assume, like he does, it's actually very beautiful. She sees the Yeled, and then she hears the Na'ar. And the Na'ar, of course, is Moshe's older brother, who's a Na'ar, Aaron. Okay, how does he know this? How come no one told me, or my 8th grade teacher, or my seminary teacher, or my rabbi? How did he know this? Who gave him this clue? Everyone always talks about Miriam being there. How did he know that Aaron was there? Look at the end of this line. How did he know? I'll tell you why. Because Na'ar Bocha is Gematria Ze Aaron HaKohen. Now, I'm going to let you, the beauty of Zoom is you can start counting on all your fingers and even all your toes. I won't even look. And you can figure out if the math works. When I see a Gematria like this, I don't count on my fingers and my toes. You know what I say? Too good to check. And if anyone finds out that the math doesn't work, do not tell me. We'll never be friends again. Do not tell me. This works. And I say that because what he's conveying is not just an original, and I would even admit radical, reading of the Pasuk. That's not what impresses me. What impresses me is what emerges from this incredible, original, creative, and radical reading of the Pasuk. Now that we know how he understands this, let's go back and read the Pasuk again. And I'll read it for you again. It's not a long Pasuk. You know it already by heart. V'tivtach v'tirei wasayeled. She sees baby Moshe floating down the river. V'hine ha-na'ar boche. And Aaron, the brother, she notices somebody's watching. Somebody on the banks of the river. Somebody hiding in the thickets. Look at that. A little older boy. And he's crying. Now, why is he crying? Why is Aaron crying? He's crying out of concern and compassion and worry and fright for the welfare of his brother. What's even worse? What's even more dangerous than a baby floating by himself down the river? You know what's worse than that? Being found by an Egyptian. You know what's even worse than that? Being found by Paro's daughter. Moshe is in mortal danger. Aaron is fine. He's safe, hiding in the bushes. But he's not crying for himself. He's crying out of care and compassion for his brother Moshe. And the Pasuk tells us, Vatachmol alav. What brought her to have mercy and compassion on Moshe? She was inspired, and she was elevated, and she was moved to compassion by Aaron's compassion, by Aaron's tears. And then, and here comes the kicker, the key of it all, Vatomer, and she said, Meyal deha Ivrim zeh. How did she know it was a Jewish baby? Not because she looked and the baby had a circumcision. Not because she looked and who else could be floating down a river. You know how she knew it was a Jewish baby? Because someone else was caring enough to watch. Someone else was caring enough to cry over this child. That's a Yiddishic child. That's what Jews do. They have care. They have compassion. Everyone is a brother. Everyone is a sister. This is not just some random discarded child, something which must have been incredibly common in those days in Egypt. This is somebody who has people who love him, who's watching him, who care about him. That's a Yiddish Amida. That's the Jewish people. That's a Jewish child. And that's what we're supposed to stand for and who we're supposed to be. And this was ingrained in Moshe before he could even have realized it. And therefore, it's not a surprise that when we see Moshe growing up a short while later, what's the very first thing we hear about him? Source number 8. He's now in the palace. He grows up. Yigdal Moshe v'yetze el achav. Vayar b'sivlosam. He sees the Jewish people suffering. Now, that could be a completely non-editorialized, just the facts, ma'am, just the facts description. But that's not how Rashi, that's not how Chazal read that description. It says Rashi, source number 9, Vayar b'sivlosam. Not just that he saw with his eyes. Nasan einav v'libo lihios meitzar Alehem. Moshe didn't just see, he was moved by their suffering. The same way Aaron had been moved by his, the same way eventually the Jewish people are moved by each other's suffering. Moshe's development, the Torah tells us, the key to him becoming the Moshe Rabbeinu, who we all look up to. Nasan Einav Velibo Lios Meitzar Lim. Now, I don't want to run so fast to the second part of that that we overlook the first. Even the Nasan Einav is important. Just think about how often, you know, certainly in a pre-corona world, where we were walking in all sorts of places in this neighborhood or this city or others, certainly those of us who may have come from various places in New York or other places, how often do we see panhandlers, homeless people, poor people, suffering people, and we don't even notice them? We don't even have Nasan Einav. I'll tell you something scarier. How often in life are there people in our own family, in our own circle of life, in our own orbit, who were suffering and we didn't even know? So just to see what's in front of you is not a simple thing. Nasan Einav. He was looking, Moshe saw. But how many people see and keep on walking? Right? If you think about your old life, maybe once upon a time, somewhere in a big city in New York or in London and the like, half the time you're walking to work, you're rushing to catch the train or the bus or whatever, you didn't even notice the people you walk by. But every now and then you notice. And maybe you even krechs for a minute. And 5 minutes later, you don't even remember having seen them. I'm not trying to indict you or being any critical of you any more than I would be of myself. Unfortunately, that's common and that's normal. But Moshe was neither of those. He was uncommon and he certainly was special. Nasan Einav, and not only that, he saw Velibo. He cared. He had compassion. He truly mattered to him. He had exactly that kindness, compassion, and as the Torah itself told us in that pasuk, "Vayetze el achav," they weren't just his fellow Jews. Every one of them, 99% of whom were strangers to him, having grown up in the palace, and yet still he viewed them as Echav, his brother. Just like Aaron cared for him because he was a brother, he cared for the pain and suffering of the Jewish people because they were all his brothers. And two more points on this before we'll get to the conclusion. In source number 10, we have the famous pasuk when Moshe has now had to run away to Midian. He becomes a shepherd, and he's now already part of Yisro's family. And all of a sudden, one day the Torah tells us, he's minding his own business, minding his sheep, and all of a sudden there's a burning bush that's talking to him. I don't know why everyone calls it the burning bush. Why not the talking bush? Right? It was talking and burning. And what is the first thing? So he's immediately drawn to it. Moshe, Moshe. And right away, Hashem says to him, stop. Don't come any closer. Al tikrav halom. Shalom alecha me'araglecha. Take your shoes off. Ki amokam ashata omer alav admas kodeshu. Because you're standing on holy ground. Why take off your shoes? What's that got to do with anything? And what about that ground is holy? Just some desert. So says the Chiddush Harim, the first Ger Rebbe, Hashem was already teaching Moshe something so powerful. I'm about to send you on a mission to be the leader of the Jewish people, to liberate them from slavery, to bring them to freedom into the promised land. You're going to show up and say, hey guys, I'm Moshe, good news, we're going free. I'm your new leader. People are going to look at you like, what? Who? You? I mean, we're happy to have some good news, but ain't no way you could be the instrument of that good news. Oh, no, really, it's so bad, I feel so bad for you, you're suffering so much, let me help you, let me liberate you. What do you know of my suffering, Moshe Rabbeinu? You, of the silk slippers growing up in the palace of Paro. So says Hashem to Moshe, before you could do anything, Shal na'lecha me'al raglecha. Take off those shoes. Feel, even if for only a moment, the heat of the burning desert sand on your bare feet. Feel some sense of what it must be like to be your brothers and sisters in the slave pits. And then Hashem tells him, you know where you're standing, that scorched desert earth? Admas Kodeshu. You know why it's holy? It's been sanctified by the suffering of your brothers and your sisters. If you don't get that, you can't be the leader. And you certainly can't be the liberator. Because this galus happened because of a lack of empathy, a lack of compassion, a lack of chesed. And throughout this entire story, what have we seen? The only way the geula is going to come, the only way Moshe can be the appropriate instrument of the geula, is if he can reverse that and that they can reverse that and they understand the proper role of kindness, compassion, and true chesed and achdus. I want to turn to one more source before we wrap it up, and that is source number 11. Now, this in particular, I can't resist, first of all, because it's awesome, but second of all, because it's on this week's Parsha, not just Shmos or Ve'era. We're really now on Parsha's bow. So if you take a look, this is a commentary of the Vilna Gaon, source number 11, the Vilna Gaon, in the Kol Eliyahu. And here, we know that as the Makos are finally reaching their apex and going to culminate with Makas Bechoros, Hashem says to Moshe, tell the Jewish people, just one more thing before we get out of there. Go to the Egyptians and ask them for all of their wealth. And incredibly, they're going to give it to you. Ubnei Yisrael, source number 11, Osu Kedvar Moshe, V'yishalu Mitzrayim, Chli Chesev, Chli Zahav, V'simlos. And then, amazingly, Hashem Natan, that's Chein Ha'am, the Egyptians, you know, the Jewish people found favor in the eyes of the Egyptians, and they gave them the stuff, right? That comes in Perek Yud Bet, Pasuk Lamed Hei Tzor Lamed Vav. Second line, source number 11. Rashi, on that Pasuk, says this is a reference back to a Pasuk in the previous chapter, Perek Yud Aleph, where Hashem had told Moshe, on the second line of the source, V'yishalu ish me'es re'ehu, that each person will ask his fellow, each woman will ask Ru'usa, her fellow, for chli chesef uchli zahav, perek yir aleph, posuk bet. So asks the Vilna Gaon, one second, what exactly is Rashi adding? The posuk in yud bet, the second posuk, chapter 12, perek yud bet, that posuk tells us that the Jewish people asked, as Moshe told them to, for silver and gold. So Rashi, the great commentary, quotes a posuk in which Hashem tells Moshe, ask them for silver and gold. Has the needle been moved one bit? Has the story been enhanced one bit? Rashi quotes a pasuk that appeared a chapter ago, which tells us exactly the same thing that the pasuk we're currently reading in the current chapter in Yud Bet just told us, that Moshe told them, ask for the silver and gold. Shkayach Rashi, you learn Perek Yud Aleph. What's the benefit of that? So says the Vilna Gaon, an unbelievably, again, radical, perhaps you could say, creative pshat. It says, if you go back to that original pasuk in the earlier chapter, Yud Aleph, Hashem tells Moshe, tell the Jewish people they should ask me'es re'ehu, from their fellow. Says the Vilna Gaon, we have a tradition in Torah Sheba'al Peh, in the Gemara, Masechta Baba Kama, he quotes it, that re'ehu, that term in biblical Hebrew, re'ehu, means a fellow Jew. You can have a best friend, a neighbor, a co-worker who's not Jewish, they could be a wonderful person. But in terms of the Hebrew terminology in the Torah, they're not re'ehu. Re'ehu means only another Jew. In other sources, it dafka means a fellow from Jew, re'ehu b'mitzvos, but it certainly cannot mean a non-Jew. In that case, says the Vilna Gaon, Gevalt, we have a problem. How do we understand pasuk, the pasuk in the earlier chapter in Perek Yud Aleph? Hashem tells Moshe, tell all the Jewish people to ask me'es re'ehu. Every woman should ask me'es re'uta. How could we assume, as we have been until now, that that meant one day you'll ask the Egyptians for their money? Re'ehu doesn't mean Egyptians. Re'ehu means a fellow Jew. So says the Vilna Gaon, amazing, right here in the middle of the source where I highlight. Basically, he says the same thing that we saw, but now with his own interpretation, in his own chidush, similar to the Medrash and the Chavetz Chaim we saw 20 minutes ago. Al karche must be tzarach lomer, de lohaya b'yicholtam la'asos kazos im lo, asher mikodem, yechofo es yitzram la'asos chesed, ish im re'ehu. It's an astounding thing. Why would the Egyptians give them their money? Why would they be successful? They didn't ransack. They didn't hold up the Egyptians with a gun. Had they get the money, why would the Egyptians just give it to them? Says the Vilna Gaon, because you have to understand, what was that original pasuk? You should ask re'ehu, v'yishalu ish me'es re'ehu. Says the Vilna Gaon, that wasn't talking about what would happen eventually, right before they left Egypt, where they would ask Egyptians for money. If yishalu ish me'es re'ehu means, the Jewish people were asking each other for help. As he says in the next phrase, Olam Chesed Yibaneh. The Jewish people discovered the key to everything. Selflessness, chesed, kindness, compassion. And says the Vilna Gaon, I think so correctly, to do this in any circumstance, let alone during the heart of the Egyptian subjugation, only if Yechofu es Yitzram. You have to conquer your Yetzer. And I don't think that means a Yetzer Hara necessarily. It means you have to overcome your natural instincts. Because as we mentioned before, when you're in the midst of something like the Galus Mitzrayim, every natural instinct is self-preservation. Worry about yourself. And yet, like we saw before in the Medrash and the Chavetz Chaim, says the Vilna Gaon, Dafka then, with no hope and certainly no extra money, the Jewish people said, we're going to help each other. We'll lend, we'll give, we'll borrow, we'll help each other. And therefore, as he says on the next line, that original pasuk in Yud Aleph, the Re'ehu, Kai Al Yisrael. And now he says, we understand the pasuk later in the Parsha and the Rashi. The pasuk later in the Parsha, Perek Yud Bet, that we started with right before the Jewish people leave Egypt, that pasuk is of course describing, yes, the phenomenon that the Jewish people went to the Egyptians, they knocked on the door, hi sir, could I have all your silver and gold and fine linen? Sure, no problem, come on and take it. Obviously Rashi is bothered, the question we're all bothered by. What in the world? Why are the Egyptians doing it? So that's why Rashi quoted what? The pasuk back in Perek Yud Aleph, the Re'ehu Pasuk. So we asked, it's redundant, Rashi didn't add anything. Says the Vilna Gaon, no. Rashi is adding everything. Rashi is explaining the secret to the whole story. The secret sauce is, why did the Egyptians give them their money? Because for years before that, the Yishalu Ish Me'es, Re'ehu. As he says here at the end, one last time for emphasis, Hainu, Ki b'nei Yisrael asu chesed zeh lezeh al yedei she'ela. When you have one blanket, one pair of clothing, one pair of shoes, and you lend them to somebody who doesn't even have that, that is unbelievable chesed, the kind of which would shake the heavens and bring ultimately the geula. So, Ad Kan, we finished the biggest part and the second part of the shir, which is, in fact, how they are going to get out of it. They got into the mess we saw at the beginning of the shir. Moshe realized it, Achenu Dehadavar, Dalturin, gossiping, being disingenuous, divisive. Alai Kalascha, it was Chet, Yosef, that brought them down there, Sinas Chinam. And now we've seen a whole treasure trove of sources, and trust me, there's more where that came from, but I had Rachmanis on you. All these sources that describe what was the key to getting out of Egypt was the kindness, the compassion, the chesed, the tzedakah, and the Ahavas Yisrael. So let's conclude this year now by turning our attention to what we hope will be Mehera Biyameinu, the ultimate and final Geula. If this is what happened in Egypt, what I'd like to suggest, based on some of these sources, is what happened in Egypt was not unique or a one-off. The cause of all of our problems remains Sinas Chinam, and the cause of, hopefully, all of our salvation and our Geula will be, if we can reverse that and learn the lesson that the Jewish people learned in Egypt of seeing everyone as Achiv, seeing all of our fellow Jews as our brothers and our sisters, and helping Re'ehu and feeling bonded to Re'ehu, despite our own challenges, or let alone differences we may have with them. The Chavetz Chaim, I mentioned, wrote many works. So in addition to Chavetz Chaim being the famous work about Lashon Hara, but he also wrote another book, source number 12, about Lashon Hara, Shmiras HaLashon. In here, says Chavetz Chaim, something amazing, amazing, amazing. He is working with the assumption, an assumption that is stated by many, including, for example, Rav Kook, source number 13, that if the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed by Sinas Chinam, then Nashuv Lehibanot V'Ha'olam Imanu Yibaneh Aide Ahavas Chinam. Then it must be that the only way the Jewish world and the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt is not through Sinas Chinam, but through boundless and limitless love of our fellow Jews. Well, that's not just Rav Kook, although Rav Kook would be good enough, but it's not just Rav Kook. There are others who said it, including the Chafetz Chaim, here, source number 12. Says the Chafetz Chaim, think about it for a moment. He describes all the sins that led to the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, Sinas Chinam, and everything that involved. And then he says as follows, where it's underlined, source number 12. Hine, im haya lana rishus livnot Beis HaMikdash. Let's say, hypothetically, right, today it could be President Trump, tomorrow it could be President Biden, but somehow, all of a sudden, like happened in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, a foreign ruler just said, go back to Israel, rebuild your Beis HaMikdash, no problem. Says the Chafetz Chaim, third line, V'hayitzar kesef lezeh, the mother of all fundraising campaigns, right? Okay, we have political permission, but we need a ton of money to build that Beis HaMikdash. Yedua, says the Chafetz Chaim, shekol echad mi Yisrael hayemitnadev benefesh chafetza kol ma shebekocho lezeh. Kedesh yilo gam kein chelek b'habayis HaMikdash, excuse me. Says the Chafetz Chaim, yes, we might need $1 billion. Who knows how much we would need? But do you think we'd have trouble raising that money? You think we'd need to have a desperate matching campaign to raise that money? Do you think we'd have to bribe every one of you with a dinner so you'd watch a Zoom call to get somebody to convince you to give the matching, which may or may not really be existing, all so that we could actually have the building of the Beis HaMikdash? No way, says the Chafetz Chaim. In minutes, in seconds, every Jew would give all the money that he or she has so they could have a portion in that incredible mitzvah of building the Beis HaMikdash. Could you imagine some of the biggest gevirim, some of the wealthiest people in the Jewish world, each one fighting, no, I want to give more money. Now, I'll give a million, I'll give 10 million, I'll give 100 million. Right? We'd fund it in a second. Says the Chafetz Chaim, I have no doubt. And yet, says the Chafetz Chaim, it's nice and it's admirable, and it's completely missing the point. Ube'einenu ein sarich kesef klal. Rather, says the Chafetz Chaim, but we're missing the point. It's not about money. That's not what's keeping the Beis HaMikdash from being built. It's not about money. Rak tzarich lehischazek minacher chamor shel lashon hara, sinas chinam. We have to get rid of all of that. V'le'echos b'midas ha-shalom. Let's state it plainly, ladies. For most of us, far easier to write a check than to stop speaking Lashon Hara. Far easier to write a check, even a big one, than to have true Avas Chinam and Avas Yisrael. To be truly b'shalom with everybody. But says the Chafetz Chaim, we're all happy to give the money for the big thing. Who wouldn't want their name on the building of the Beis HaMikdash? But that's not what we need. That's not what it's going to take. What we need, what it's going to take, is undoing the sin that destroyed the Beis HaMikdash to begin with. And that requires care and compassion, kindness, both in word, not Lashon Hara, but Lashon Tov, and indeed in Chesed. And therefore he concludes, we have to realize, Al yidei zeh yitukan hachet, v'nizkeh lebiyash Mashiach l'binyan ha-mikdash. In other words, I could say very simply, says the Chafetz Chaim, if we just learn the lesson of Egypt, of Golus Mitzrayim and of Geula Mitzrayim, they got themselves into the mess for all of their disunity, divisiveness, and fighting, and they only got themselves out of it when they made that bris shel chesed. V'yar b'sivlo sam, echav re'ehu. Then, when they were selfless, not selfish, when they were kind and compassionate, not mean and spiteful and vengeful, that's when the gula happened. Hashem's compassion was aroused. So just to wrap this all up, ladies, and just to end on a powerful story, I'll share with you, I don't remember where I first heard this or saw this, but it's a beautiful, beautiful story about one of the most famous of the great Hasidic masters, Rav Naftali of Rupshitz. And the story goes that he described his childhood. In his childhood, he described when he was so young, he was just learning Kriya, he was learning how to read. And he was taught one day by his Malamed, I think actually maybe his father, I think the story goes with his father, that if you see at the end of a Pasuk, you're learning Chumash, and you see two Yuds, two letter yuds next to each other. What is that? That's the name of Hashem. That's Hashem. We don't spell it out. Right? Now most Sidurim probably or Chumashim say Yud Kei Vav Kei. But I remember, certainly, and they still exist probably, but I still remember from my childhood, you'd sometimes see Sidurim or other things, just Yud Yud. Says Rav Tali Ravshitz, my father told me, if I see a Yud Yud, that's Shem Hashem. So he said, what happened? Soon afterwards, whenever I would read a Pasuk, and I would get to the end of a Pasuk, any Pasuk, what would I see? Two Yuds, one on top of the other at the end of the Pasuk. And I would read Hashem's name. So my father would say to me, what are you doing? Hashem's name's not at the end of this Pasuk. Why are you just saying Hashem's name? So I said to him, what do you mean? You told me whenever I see two Yuds, that's Shem Hashem. So my father realized I was confusing a colon, an end of the sentence, end of the line, the two dots, with the two Yuds. So my father taught me, very simple, if you see two Yuds next to each other, that's Hashem's name. If you see two Yuds on top of each other, that's just the end of a pasuk. So says Rav Naftali Ravshitz, as I got older, I thought about that more and more. And I realized that what my father was telling me was something truly profound. When you have two Yuds, two Yids, two Yidden, two Jews that are next to each other, that are helping each other, that are living for each other, that's where you'll find Hashem. Hashem's name is right there. But if you see two Yuds on top of each other, trampling on each other, pushing each other down so they can get further, that's not Shem Hashem. That's a Sof Pasuk. That's the end of anything good that might be happening. And that, I believe, encapsulates everything we were describing. They got into the mess because they were on two Jews on top of each other. They got out of the mess because they learned to be two Yuds next to each other. When will we learn that lesson? Let's hope very, very soon.